Welcome to the pilot episode of York, First Post's brand new cricket podcast. My name is Vaibhav Shah and I am accompanied by two extraordinary guests, both doyens of sports journalism and broadcasting in India, Ayaz Memon and Gaurav Kagra. So pleased to have you guys here. Yeah.
Thanks, Vaibhav.
Very nice introduction, Vaibhav, but I'm not so sure about doyens, at least in my case. I know Ayaz is.
You might be young by heart, but you know, you've done fair bit of work yourself. Coming to the topic for the first episode, the debut episode is with the India versus South Africa Test Series, which is going on. At York, we would like to discuss how cricket between these two countries have had a far-reaching impact than just being a sport. How cricket has been a part of sporting diplomacy since Proteus's readmission, the unique and the amicable relations between these two nations throughout the years. And you both have seen everything since the readmission, especially Ayaz. I believe you were there for the Eden Garden series when Clive Rice's South Africa was here in India.
Yeah.
How was the occasion like?
Well, you believe right, first of all. I was there. You know, it was a memorable tour for the fact that things move so fast. And they started moving fast first at the political and diplomatic level after Nelson Mandela was released from jail and the ANC government was being formed. And one of the things that they agreed upon, remember, South Africa's readmission into the ICC was then facilitated by the BCCI.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an agreement reached that the first match that South Africa would play would be against India and that it would be in India. Now obviously it was too swift, things moved so fast to arrange a test series, so they agreed on a 3-match one-day series, and the first match was in Kolkata where the team landed. I was not waiting at the airport to receive Clive Rice's team, but I read Clive Rice's statement now recently in hindsight, you know, he's late and departed.
Mm-hmm.
But when the team reached Kolkata, the procession, I mean, there were fans from the airport into the city and they were just bowled over because they thought that actually the crowds might be a little hostile still, you know, that these are the South Africans, these are the guys who believed in apartheid, etc. Self-doubts more than anything else.
Sure.
And to see that kind of reception completely floored them. I think that also played a role in the results over there in that series.
Yeah, the other thing about that, Vaibhav, if I remember correctly, you know, obviously I wasn't a working journalist at that time. But was obviously Kolkata, I would imagine, Ayaz, was because of the fact that Jagmohan Dalmia was,
yes,
from Kolkata.
Absolutely.
And he was the strongman of Indian cricket at that time. And he was, I think he was the BCCI president.
Yes.
And it made sense for him to be on a home turf.
And so great friendship between
him and Ali Baka.
Ali Baka.
Yes. And for them to be on home turf. And he, in a sense, he could assure the success of the experiment. And he felt comfortable on his home patch to have the South Africans come over there. I remember the images. They are, you know, these are cricketers the world hadn't heard of much, Vaibhav, and you suddenly saw the motorcade and the images of, you know, all these cricketers being garlanded and being swamped by crowds, and they immediately got a sense of what cricket meant to people in India and how they were going to be embraced back as international cricketers.
So I wasn't even born when Clive Rice's team was here, but I've seen the images. They
make
were
make us sound ancient.
Absolutely not. But I've seen them, you know, bowing and sort of doing namaste and recepting to the crowd. But why do you think such love was showered over the team?
For a couple of reasons. One was Mandela was a hero in India. And the fact that he had been released from jail, and the Indian government had a very strong relation. Remember, for many years, or till then at least, one couldn't even travel officially to South Africa.
Correct.
I remember in 1983, and Gaurav, I don't know if I've shared this story with you. In 1983, when we covered, or at least I covered the World Cup in England, we were approached, some of the Indian journalists, by the South Africans, including Dr. Ali Bakar, who then was on the other side of the divide, saying, come to South Africa. They wanted people to come to South Africa. And, you know, we said, we can't come because the passport used to say it can travel everywhere except South Africa and Israel in those days. So he said, listen, you don't have to worry about the visa. You'll get a slip of paper which allows you to enter and exit.
Oh.
So that was the kind of relationship. And then things kind of transformed so dramatically. And Mandela was obviously a hero for his fight against apartheid. 27 years in jail.
Yes.
It is, you know, incredible what happened. And in my case, I had gone to South Africa before this tour happened. When the two boards merged, South African Cricket Union and South African Cricket Board, there was a merger and a unified board came into place.
Mm-hmm.
I was there, and I had gone there because Sunil Gavaskar was one of the invitees.
Yeah.
So there were a few people called from India, R. Mohan, myself and Kishore Bhimani amongst
mm-hmm.
the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Sunil Gavaskar was there, Sir Garfield Sobers was there, Richie Beno, Jim Swanton, a few of the others. And that's when the unification of the board took place. Mandela became, you know, center stage in politics in South Africa, in fact globally. And therefore, things moved very dramatically. You could now get a visa to go to South Africa, and the South Africans could get a visa to come to India.
I've read that it was disturbing for you to see how the extent to which the apartheid was affected.
We saw the remnants of apartheid. You know, apartheid was being dismantled. I mean, when I first went to South Africa, it was early first half of 1991, which is when Mandela had been released from jail. He had not yet become the president of the republic, and he lived in Soweto, which was still a black township. Perhaps the most memorable encounter I've ever had in my life is with Mandela for breakfast, along with Gavaskar and Mihir Bose and Kamar Ahmed, etc., etc. And Mandela didn't know too much about cricket. He was not a great cricket follower. He was more into boxing and football and, you know, stuff like that. But Soweto was a black township. And imagine Mandela is living there. And when you saw Soweto, you said, shit, is this how the blacks lived in South Africa? And then you went to, I think there's a township called Lavesia, where the Asians stayed. So the segregation was so dramatic when you went from the outside. Not that the standard of living was poor, certainly not for the Asians, because they were professionals, qualified people, lawyers, doctors, chartered accountants. But the racial segregation was, you know, in your face. And to have confronted that, even if you went from a far from developed country like India, was kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, you know, growing up at that time in sort of school, and Nelson Mandela was a figure of reverence. Mm-hmm. And he was the symbol of South Africa, in the sense that he was a symbol of resistance to a brutal regime. And I think everybody in India in that sort of age group, in their teens, and just when you become sort of politically aware and you become aware of the world around you, knew that the South African system was a blot on everything. And it was really a system that deserved not just to be dismantled, but that the world needed to completely disassociate with South Africa till the time that this system was in place. And Mandela was the figure of that resistance. So, you know, his importance as a figure in that time cannot be undermined, even in the hearts and minds of Indian students and Indian life.
Fascinating stories these, actually. But there's obviously cricket to be played.
Yes.
And the 1992-93 tour, it was called the Friendship. It was billed as a Friendship series and everything. But it had a fair share of tussle in terms of after Kapil Dev warned Peter Kirsten a couple of times, he ran him out for backing up too much. And it sort of had a controversial end towards it. Do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, the incident with Peter Kirsten came, you know, very deep into the tour.
Sure.
First things first, I've just got the name of the Asian township. It's Lanetia, not Lavesia. It was called Lanetia. Look, it was actually a very hostile series, you know. I mean, while it was a friendship series and everybody was on their best behavior otherwise, the cricket that was played on the ground was very hostile. And I think that was a very strong lesson to the Indian cricket team and the management and everybody else associated with the tour, that, you know, all this backslapping and bonhomie was fine, but the South Africans were deadly serious and wanting to win. In that sense, they were like the Aussies. Mm-hmm. You know, they were very tigerish on the field, not pulling back, say, in bowling bouncers or hustling the batsmen, even with a smile. You know, you can hiss through your teeth. People might think that you're smiling and saying, you know, something pleasant, but actually you are hissing at the batsmen. And they had a fantastic bowling attack, you know, led by Alan Donald. In fact, I must mention here, in all honesty, that all the Indian journalists were so keen and eager to see Alan Donald bowl in test matches, because to see a bowler of that express pace was very remote in the Indian situation. Even when touring teams came to India, what you saw was, you know, bowlers like Alan Donald or of that pace reduced to nothing on the Indian pitches. Of course, when he came to India, he got a lot of success because he was so quick through the air. But Alan Donald, McMillan, some of these guys, they were fantastic. And then there was Jonty Rhodes,
Cronje.
Cronje was the emerging young hero of South Africa. But and the fielding standard. So one was the Alan Donald bowling, which kind of gripped everybody's imagination. And the other was the fielding. You know, we had yet to see Jonty Rhodes' run out of Inzamam ul-Haq in the World Cup. But the overall influence of Jonty Rhodes was beginning to show in the fielding. And I can remember that he used to field at point or deep point, not short cover, but regular cover. And within 15, 18 yards on either side, the Indian batsmen wouldn't dare to take a run.
Vaibhav, I also remember, I know Ayaz mentioned Alan Donald. I remember watching that series, about 15, 16 years old at the time, and I was struck by Brett Schultz, who was a genuinely scary bowler.
Yes.
You know, he only played a couple of test matches, but we hadn't really seen... See, we used to get cricket on television very intermittently in India at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Used to get no international test series except the ones India was playing. You wouldn't get full sessions out of England. You would get cricket out of Australia, but not all the cricket. So you would see it in... And the West Indies also, you would see it in bits and pieces. But gosh, this guy, Brett Schultz, was a genuinely scary guy and a nasty piece of work. I mean, he would not smile.
Yes.
And
left
arm quick, had this sort of intimidating action, and he would come very heavy on the crease. Didn't do a lot of damage, I think, in terms of wickets column, but he was scary. He was a bowler that I remember very distinctly as an image from that series. I was just looking back at some of the stats from that series. He played only a couple of the games. He was injury prone, never had a long career. But gosh, he was a sight. He was like a raging bulldog.
Yeah, this is really fascinating for me, especially someone who's born in the 90s. These are stories which I think is just part of knowledge you want to gain as a budding cricket journalist. Moving on, despite being 20 years in isolation, South Africa's standard in cricket was pretty good. And I think, Gaurav, you had a lot of conversations and interviews with past South African players. You know about that, how they maintained that sort of level. Could you expand more on that?
Well, I think that there was no secret to it, Vaibhav. I think despite the fact that they were isolated internationally, South Africa continued to have a very good first-class system. A lot of their players also went and played county cricket and developed their skills there. Mike Proctor had a really big county career. Clive Rice and Richard Hadley were a combination that the whole world respected. Kepler Wessels went out and played for Australia, actually. A lot of these. So, and besides that, on the domestic circuit, South Africa kept a very high standard of first-class cricket. In fact, I was speaking to Daryl Cullinan, who went on to have a very successful career for South Africa. And one of the points he made was that for them, growing up, this was the pinnacle. First-class cricket was the pinnacle. Test cricket and all of these things wasn't on their radar. They knew that they were not going to get an opportunity to play test cricket. So they played first-class cricket as the pinnacle of their game. And if you see the players who came through at that time, Vaibhav, you notice that there are several players with all-round skills. There weren't really too many complete mugs with the bat. And there were several players who could bowl decently as well. Cronier, a classic example.
Yeah.
Craig Matthews, who was another fast bowler, was a decent lower order batsman. McMillan, very good batsman. That tradition continued with Klusener and the like. So South Africa had a culture of creating very strong, skilled, first-class cricketers who were multiple skills. In fact, from that World Cup, when they reached the semi-final and had a very good shot at reaching the final, and who knows, win the World Cup, they were completely ready for international cricket because their domestic structure allowed for players of that kind to be developed over the years.
I just want to add to what Gaurav said, that one of the reasons why they had so many high-quality all-rounders is actually, when you look back, their talent pool wasn't big in terms of numbers. They had extraordinary talent, but not big in numbers, because cricket was predominantly a white man's game. And a lot of the Asians played, but they were not allowed to participate so readily when the apartheid regime was, in action. In fact, the blacks were kept out of the sport. The blacks were into athletics and football in any case, not so much into cricket.
Or rugby. Yeah.
And I think one of the things which, at least of that stage, South African cricket at that stage, they were very determined to find their place back in the matrix of cricket, because the last series they had played before apartheid finished them off was against Australia in 1969. Australia had beaten India 2-1 or 3-1 in a home series here, went to South Africa, lost 0-4 against what could arguably be or have been the greatest sides, along with the West Indies of the 80s and Australia of the 1990s, early 2000. Barry Richards, Ali Barker, Graham Pollock, Peter Pollock, Mike Proctor, you name it, those guys, Colin Bland, all kinds of guys who were revered, venerated figures now. So having reach that pinnacle and then to see this game snatched away from them had caused a lot of heartburn, and they were really motivated to do well when they came back.
Slowly we moved to the 1999 World Cup semi-final I'm talking about, which is, you know, right there for South Africa to sort of cross the line and perhaps stop Australia from winning the hat-trick of World Cups, which eventually they did. But, you know, for me personally, that was the point where I started watching cricket, and, you know, it was a heartbreak for me, not even understanding the nuances of sport or having an allegiance towards India.
You were 2.5 years old.
I was 5 years old.
But 5 years old.
So that happened, and then South Africa came to India in 2000, and that was my first series which I went to see in the stadium at the Wankhede. I remember that, you know, Tendulkar was out in 97, and there was a chord which struck with me with South Africa, and which resonates with many Indians. And that is why you see perhaps a lot of South Africans are revered in India. There has been a lot of love towards South African cricketers, and there's a mutual respect. Why is that relationship so closely knit between India and South Africa? I don't think so India enjoys the same sort of relationship with, say, an Australia or an England or in Sri Lanka for that matter.
With Australia, certainly now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one reason was that, you know, the 1991 kind of tour, or when they returned back into the ICC fold and started playing international cricket again, India had become an ally. There were frequent exchanges between India and South Africa in terms of cricket tours. If you look at the way we've been playing against Australia, earlier it would be 10 years, a 10-year gap before the team came to India.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's only from the mid 1990s onwards, that India and Australia tours became more frequent. With England, the tours were fairly regular because England was the major domo in international cricket, and in terms of itinerary, setting the itinerary. But their best players wouldn't come here for many, many years, for almost half a century. 1981, for instance, when all their players came, you know, and Jeff Boycott walked out of a tour and went away to play in South Africa as a rebel. Hmm. He broke Gary Sobers' record and went off, you know. That was the approach they had to a series against India. When the Australians would come here, including in the, you know, very famous tour of 1986 when we had the tight test match, they would send people here to check out on the hotels, how good the hotels were, and they would bring their own beer because they didn't want to drink local beer or water, etc. So that was, but things transformed after 1991 and India's liberalization, the economy doing well. India became, in my opinion, started becoming the Mecca and the El Dorado. Mm-hmm. El Dorado after the IPL. So things started changing in India from the 1990s, and you'll find that the exchanges have become far more frequent with Australia, with England, as also with South Africa.
Yeah, I think over the years, a lot of South African players gained prominence in India, gained respect in India, yes, wherever, but also must remember that the South Africans were involved in the match fixing scandal, right, which was very much here in India that the first sort of the big story broke. It was an investigation by the CBI that resulted in Hansi Kronje actually then falling from the pedestal.
Cult figure. By that time, Hansi Kronje was a cult figure.
Was a hugely respected figure around the world. The South Africans had a very big fan following or a huge success rate. So that was also a connection that they had with India. Herschel Gibbs was implicated in that situation. Henry Williams was a fast bowler who also got caught up. And that scandal in many ways did not rupture the relationship, because obviously there were some Indians also who were caught up in the scandal. But the South Africans came to India and always played well. You know, the 2000 series that you were talking about, when Sachin Tendulkar's last as captain, this was right after India lost 3-0 in Australia. Then they lost 2-0. And on Indian pitches, the South Africans were fantastic. Yeah. They were very good in that series. I remember Sean Pollock being very good, the Indian batting having absolutely no answer except Tendulkar. And then Azhar made a sort of chancy 100, which ended up being his last test innings for India. But the South Africans have always played well in India, and that brand of cricket has been appreciated over the years. Of course, there have been figures like Jonty and AB de Villiers who've become more acceptable and more revered than
even,
some of
even
their
for
others.
That matter, Gary Kirsten. For,
well, as coach, yes.
Yes. So, like you mentioned, you know, there have been some falling outs as well. Be it Harun Logat and BCCI at loggerheads at one point of time, and the Peter Kirsten Kapil Dev incident we mentioned, the Mike Dennis and Tendulkar ball tampering incident. So a lot of things have happened, and it has been sour, it has been up and down. But overall, if you believe, the relationship has been really good since the 2000s. It was, of course, the IPL came in and it opened the floodgates for a lot of players to come in and play in India for a month and a half. Then India was becoming a powerhouse in itself, and India started dominating South Africa in conditions. It wasn't the other way around. There was a shift.
Well, India has been dominating every country that comes to India, whether it's England or Australia or South Africa, because we're just so good. I think this is something that we all need to appreciate also.
Absolutely.
That, you know, the system has become robust. It has its flaws in India. There may be, you know, administration, you know, malified in some places, etc., etc. But the game has spread to every nook and corner. So the talent which is emerging is from across the length and breadth of the country. And the talent is finding its way up the pyramid. Yeah. Therefore, at the elite level, you have far, far more number of players today in India than you ever had. But I'm saying that there's so much competition that even somebody as talented and as gifted as Rohit has to prove his mettle. I think what's happened in South Africa, actually, like Pakistan and West Indies, their players who used to be haunting English counties, you know, almost the entire squad from South Africa, from West Indies, from Pakistan would be playing for some county or the other. And there was a richness about county cricket which they absorbed. It brought them in touch with players from elsewhere in the world. It just made them better equipped to tackle international challenges. They were robbed of that because English county cricket, I mean, they restricted the number of overseas players. These guys found no place to play. So their standards started dropping, like it's happened with Pakistan. West Indies is the classic example or the most stark example. And then the IPL reversed in the sense of the format, because it's not first class cricket, it's T20. Mm-hmm. But it gave them opportunity, it gave them a livelihood, first things first.
Yep.
Then it gave them an opportunity to brush shoulders with the Who's best too? In the world.
Yeah.
So you absorb these things. So I think that there has been a role reversal, so to speak. India or Indian cricketers used to be in awe of anything that came from Australia, for most things that came from South Africa, and a few things that came from England are no longer in awe. You know, the last time South Africa were here in India, 2015, with A.B. de Villiers and Hashim Amla, they just bombed so badly. And that's because Indian cricket not only has talent, but it's also got a lot more confidence to go out there and play and win.
Weber, one other thing that I think is important in this relationship between India and South Africa, I think the 2009 IPL moving to South Africa is a very major
touch point. Very big inflection point.
In fact, I wanted to mention that.
In 2008, if you know, we all think of the IPL right now as this hugely successful tournament. 2008, when the IPL first played, it was a very successful tournament. But 2009, there was central government was not at all keen for to support the IPL. And had that season not taken off, and had that season not happened, then who knows whether the IPL could have recovered the next year and found the space that it has in the hearts and minds of Indian fans. Because coming back after 2 years, maybe it would have. But the continuity that happened because of the 2009 season, I remember going there for the 2009 season and watching the last phase of the IPL at the grounds. And I know it wasn't full and it wasn't packed, but the miracle of being able to, within a short span, organize a tournament across that country and to do it with a reasonable amount of success and maintain the momentum of the tournament, I think India's and South Africa's relationship at a board level was really, I know there's been controversy about that and some financial irregularities have been reported and all of that has happened. But just from a synergy and a level of just aligning with each other, that was a very important stepping point.
It was very last minute, and Cricket South Africa was more than welcome to host India, and to organize such a massive event was wonderful. This is all for the first episode of York. Ayaz and Gaurav have shared memorable stories, and we'll be doing this a lot often. We'll be talking about past, about context, about a lot of things which happens beyond the cricketing field. And hopefully you like the stories and keep listening to Yokt. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you, Ayaz.
Thanks, Vaibhav.
Thanks, Vaibhav.